things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm in a weird place today.
Yeah, we decided to take a little siesta from the meds today.
Siesta from the meds today, which is fine. My doctor said that I can
have a day off every once in a while.
I can have a day off every once in a while, but like it makes me absolutely fucking useless. Useless. I'm sorry if anybody just heard my stomach grumble on the mic. It was really loud for me over here.
I didn't hear it, so.
You'll hear it on playback, I'm sure. Yeah, it just makes me useless. So I'm feeling very, a little bit like Eeyore.
Okay.
In the gray cloud and tired.
Yeah, I've been sleeping in really late, which for probably like 3 or 4 months, I got into this habit of getting up really early, which was great because then I could get podcast stuff done in the morning, get travel stuff done in the morning before I hit my day job at like 9:30.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been sleeping in until like 8 or 8:30, which doesn't really give me time to do anything else.
Yeah.
And then it just makes me feel so unproductive.
Really?
For the day, because I just didn't get anything done before I actually started working.
Do you feel like defeated before you even get going?
Yeah, just like I'm just not starting out on the right foot. I feel like I'm starting like in front of the 8-ball instead of behind the 8-ball.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
Is that right?
But no, but, the other way. But yes.
I'm behind something.
Yeah. And in front of other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I told Ryan today, I was like, no more sleeping in for me. I can't be doing this just because you're home. So I need to be getting up at like 6:30.
Well, I think it's that. But like also, Ian has always been a really early riser. He's normally up at like 5.
Yeah.
But the past few weeks, it's been like 5:30 and 6. And now like we get up together at like 6:15. And mm-hmm. I think it's because of like the sun.
Oh, that could be it,
too. Yeah, just like your circadian rhythm. So maybe when daylight savings time hits, daylight savings times happens.
Yeah, maybe it'll figure itself out. But I gotta start setting my alarm for earlier, I think.
Okay.
And stick to it.
Well, keep us posted.
Thanks.
On that. I get the same way. Like, if I don't stick to my regular normal routine, it will throw off my entire rest of my day just because I feel like I'm scrambling to, like,
just catch up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the one. So
go to bed early, kids. Get your slip.
Yeah. I stayed up late last night, too. I had a bachelorette party that we went to.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it was fun. We ended up getting to the winery late. We had reserved a fire pit.
Mm-hmm.
Got to the winery late. Even though this specific winery said that they were open till 10, they refunded our money for the fire pit at like 6 o'clock before the reservation started.
Oh.
Because they said that we sounded wishy-washy.
What?
Whether we were coming or not. But we show up. We were late.
How late?
About 45 minutes.
Oh, that's pretty late.
It was pretty late. We had gotten dinner. We were supposed to get there at like 7:30. We got there at like 8:15.
Mm-hmm.
But we were like, we still like would like to do the fire pit if that's okay. Like,
yeah,
you close in an hour and 15 minutes or something.
That's
like
enough
that
time to have a
And they were like, we actually decided to close early and we stopped serving at 8:30.
What?
And we were like, the sign on the door says 10 though. And we had a reservation. Like, yes, we were late.
Yeah,
but if we came for this reservation, were you gonna kick us out at 8:30?
Or what?
Or like, what was the plan? I don't know. It was wild. But
they probably like at 7:31.
Oh.
They were like, they're not coming.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to go home.
Yes. Yeah. So it was just very bizarre. So we were all standing in the middle of this parking lot trying to figure out what to do next.
Yeah.
And we ended up going to another little bar in Fort Wayne, which was a lot of fun. It was just like, we went to Cocktails.
Oh, that's my favorite bar.
It was so fun. It was just like we all like dressed kind of warm because we were expecting to be outside.
Sure.
So we just weren't really dressed for the occasion. It was fine.
It's okay. Cocktails is very easy breezy.
Yeah, it was.
They literally make the best martini in this entire... Nick's Lounge downtown off State Street.
Yeah.
Makes a pretty damn good martini, but cocktails.
Have you been to cocktails since they've changed ownership, though?
No, don't. Please don't tell me.
It's not bad. It's just not the same.
So
I suggest you go again. Josephine, please don't do what you think you're going to do right now.
Josephine, Marie Nicole.
Anna Nicole Smith.
Anna Nicole Smith.
You hot mess express. So anyway, my conspiracy theory is that the martinis are no longer good.
Okay. That's the theory. We will test it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And see.
So, speaking of other conspiracy theories.
Yes.
It's conspiracy theory week.
What a fantastic segue this was.
It was really bad. You don't have to lie to me.
No, you did a great job. I love it. I would have never gotten there. I would have talked about how grumpy I am about martinis for the rest of the hour.
For the rest of the hour. So, welcome to A Little Bit Grim. That's Jenny over there.
Hi. That's Taylor over there.
Hi. Who's going first today?
Oh, frig, man.
I don't know.
I think it's you.
I would love to. Let me open my stuff.
Oh, are you ready? Are you ready now?
I'm almost ready.
Are you ready now?
All right. This is kind of a fun one. It's not super dark and deep and heavy. Just needed a little lighthearted conspiracy theory today.
Oh, okay.
In the middle of spooky season.
For the Halloween times?
Yeah, for Halloween times, I was like, let's take a break.
Okay.
From spooky scary. It's a little morbid.
Is it?
Yeah, okay. Okay. So why don't I just tell you about it?
Okay, yeah, I would love to hear about it.
So my sources are biography.com and a PBS article written by Dr. Howard Markle.
Okay.
As we know, I love a good Disney conspiracy theory. And this might actually take the cake. This is a pretty good one.
Okay.
Before we get into the actual theory, it's important to know a little bit about the man behind the animation. Walter Elias Disney was born in Chicago, December 15th in 1901. In his late 20s, he had created an animated character called Mickey Mouse and his empire was born. In addition to all things animated, Walt also had a fascination with an obsession with two concepts, death and the future. In most of his animated stories, one or both parents of the main character are dead. And in his theme parks, there are areas called Tomorrowland, where he and his team projected ideas of what they thought the future might look like. Now, it is strange to me walking through these areas because these were designed in the 50s, and it's what people thought the world would look like today in 2021.
Yeah.
Or in, like, 2000, and oh boy, just so wrong.
Really?
Yeah, none of this came true. And he also built Epcot, a park at Walt Disney World, which stands for the Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow.
I like Epcot.
I like Epcot a lot. There are a lot of people who don't, but I just thought it was interesting. Like, I didn't really realize that was an acronym?
Yeah. I didn't know it was either.
Yeah. So, but it's all about the community of tomorrow, what they think the world could look like. As a company, Disney was very concerned with their image, and although Walt was a heavy smoker, they edited out his cigarettes in the photos of him. However, he died of lung cancer in 1966.
Womp womp.
Yeah. His death was felt by thousands, but the legacy he left endures. One of the first things that started to spark suspicion was his last appearance or film that he created. He gathered all of the heads of his departments and had the cameras film him as he dictated what he expected of them in the future. Hmm. Many believe that at this point, he was well aware of his impending demise and that he was trying to give the heads of department clues as to what he wanted. He looked them in the eye one by one and said he would see them soon.
That's ominous.
So, yes, there are many problematic things surrounding Walt and his theme parks, and I might get into those at a later time, but today we are focusing on what happened to Walt after he died.
Okay.
Because there are theories.
Yeah. I think I only know of one.
This is probably the one.
Okay.
In reality, he was cremated and interred at the Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Glendale, California. But I ask where the fun in that is.
Whose reality is that?
Right. So there is not a small number of people that believe that Walt was actually put into a cryonic suspension chamber containing liquid nitrogen after he died.
Amazing.
Effectively freezing him so that one day when technology advancements catch up, he might be thawed out and reanimated to continue to live.
How fun.
Now, the craziest thing is that there is a cryonics institute that does, in fact, freeze bodies. I got myself into a deep website rabbit hole and just whispered, what the fuck, over and over and over again for probably an hour.
Okay.
So if anyone is curious, it is cryonics.org. And on the homepage, we have this tagline. Why choose cryonics? The Cryonics Institute provides an ambulance ride to the high-tech hospital of the future. When present medical science has given up on you or your loved ones, we seek another solution. The choice is yours. Do you take the chance at life?
No.
No.
No, I don't.
And then there is a FAQ page where the question that is posed is, isn't cryonics just a wild science fiction gamble? And the answer is,
yes.
We don't believe so.
No, I'm sure you don't.
I'm sure you don't. Cryonics is based on the evidence of emerging technologies that are in development today. This includes nanotechnology, the manipulation of individual atoms or molecules, which we believe will eventually allow mankind to build or repair virtually any physical object, including human cells and biological tissue.
Wild.
Another question is, when will that happen? And the answer is, Robert A. Freitas, author of a 3-volume text, Nanomedicine, sections from which are available via our links page, has publicly stated, quote, I would not be surprised if the cryonics revival was attempted by 2040 to 2050. Of course, no one can reliably predict such dates, and we don't rely on any particular prediction.
Sure.
So here's the thing. Here's my thing. It's not like he just decided to freeze himself one day when he was like 45 years old and in perfectly good health.
Right.
So he died of lung cancer. Are we going to just get him a new set of lungs? Are we just relying on medicine being advanced enough at the point of unfreezing him that we'll just be able to fix the lungs he has?
I don't know. I could see if like he was like in the prime of his life.
Uh-huh.
And then frozen.
Yeah.
That he could then be dethawed and brought back.
Right. With probably some damages.
Absolutely. Right. A lot of damages.
Yeah. Like, did you read the True Blood books?
I did.
So, the only thing that I can think of is, in the True Blood books, Elvis turned into a vampire, but he had too much, like, drugs in his system that it messed him up.
Yes.
And he's not fully functioning. That is what I think that frozen reanimated people would like.
Yes, I agree. Kind of not all no there. Brain activity
right.
happening. No, it's been frozen for too long.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Great, now you're a burden on future society.
So maybe he thought that the cancer wouldn't be a thing in the future, but he will be really disappointed when he wakes up, because surprise, surprise, it's still a thing.
Cancer's still a thing.
But my questions seriously run wild, because there are so many people believe that he didn't freeze his whole body. They believe he only froze his head.
What?
And the idea is that we're just going to grow him a new body.
It's giving very Futurama.
Yeah. Yeah. Grow him a new body when he thaws out.
Perfect.
The head's the only thing that matters.
Just sew the noggin onto like a German Shepherd or something.
He'll be fine.
Yeah.
The stuff of nightmares. Believers of this theory say that Disney actually died days before it was announced in order to give his family time to make the arrangements for the cryonic suspension. They point to the secrecy surrounding his funeral and burial as a key point in this theory. Many believe that at some point before his death, Disney read a book recently released in 1964 called The Prospect of Immortality, written by Robert C.W. Ettinger, and this book brought to light the possibility of cryonics.
Okay.
two separate biographies of Disney, Leonard Mosley's Disney World, written in 1986, and Mark Elliott's Walt Disney Hollywood Dark Prince, written in 1993, claimed that an obsession with death led Disney to his interest in cryonics, and these biographies captured the imagination of hordes of people who perpetuate the rumor that Walt is indeed frozen.
Hordes, huh?
Hordes.
Okay.
Ultimately, we don't know exactly how or when the rumors got started, but there is a story that came out a few weeks after the news of his death broke. A reporter for a tabloid newspaper called the National Spotlight claimed that he had snuck into St. Joseph's Hospital in Burbank, which is located directly across the street from Disney Studios, where he was treated during his final illness. As the story went, the reporter disguised himself as an orderly, broke into a storage room, and he saw the deceased Disney suspended in a cryogenic metal cylinder.
Did you?
It's a suspicious source.
It's sketch to me.
If I'm just like bare minimum sketch.
Yes.
The first written account we have was in an article in Paris Magazine LCI from 1969. Although I could not find the original source, all of my sources pointed to that source.
Okay.
So I did try to find it and I just didn't have any luck. And it probably also would have been in French. So, I mean,
fair.
But I couldn't find it.
Okay.
A few years later, an American magazine called the National Tattler fueled the rumors by predicting that Disney would be thawed out in 1975. Obviously, that did not happen.
Yeah.
But where would they keep Disney's frozen body, you ask?
Taylor, where would they keep his frozen body?
Well, there's a couple different places.
Okay, tell me about them.
Thank you. I will. there are a few places that believers point to as the final resting place, or I guess final-ish resting place of Walt Disney.
Final-ish.
Some believe that he is in a chamber underneath the Pirates of the Caribbean ride at Disneyland Park.
Oh, Christ.
Which I did a conspiracy theory on like a year ago. Yeah. And some others say that he lies under Sleeping Beauty's castle in Disneyland.
You know? All right.
The rumors were spread around once again in the 90s after several Disney Parks employees started talking about the Big Freeze once again. They were even quoted in some less than scholarly biographies. However, in 1972, Disney's daughter, Diane, refuted these rumors by saying, "There is absolutely no truth to that my father, Walt Disney, wished to be frozen. I doubt that my father had ever even heard of cryonics." Today, people believe that because we are in the midst of the 50th anniversary of Walt Disney World Park opening, and it will be the 55th anniversary of Disney's death, that he will be thawed out on the anniversary of his death on December 5th.
Well, I can't wait for it.
Yeah. So I have a quote that was shared on social media.
Okay.
It was an article. And the title of the article says, 55 years after his death, Walt Disney's frozen body will be thawed December 2021, in an attempt to bring him back to life. Reads a screenshot of a news headline shared on Facebook on September 23rd by the page Disney After Dark. The post went...
Disney After Dark.
The post went viral and made its way to TikTok, Instagram, and USA Today. However,
amazing.
Right. The screenshot is from a satirical website, which is the bane of my existence and makes me want to rip all my hair out regularly.
Bummer.
So while this theory is wild enough by itself, I have one more layer.
Okay.
Of this for you. So some believe that not only is Disney frozen and being held underneath one attraction or another at Disneyland Park, but Disney Studios created one of their best-selling blockbuster films to hide the evidence even further.
Don't even say it out loud, Taylor.
So when you search Disney Frozen...
Oh my god!
What do you think comes up in Google, Jenny?
Elsa!
Elsa!
Now listen, that I could see.
Yeah.
That I could actually see.
So that's right, the smash hit film, Frozen. Not conspiracy theories about Disney's frozen body or head. This theory says that the company wanted to bury the conspiracy, or the truth, as some would say,
Can't get your finger out of here.
The truth. This theory says that the company wanted to bury the conspiracy or truth about Disney and created a film that would be so popular that it would clog the search engines and prevent people from researching the possibility of Disney being Frozen.
I could see that. Uh-huh. Like an actual marketing company being so at their wits' end with these like stupid rumors.
Oh, yeah. And being like, what do we do to fix this? We're just going to make a new movie about it.
We're going to make an ice princess is what we're going to do.
Uh-huh. Dennis Kolaski, president of the Cryonics Institute, the company I mentioned earlier that cryonically freezes bodies and was mentioned in the Daily News article, told USA Today that the company is not bringing Disney back to life. And if anybody has Disney in a cryonic chamber, it is not the Cryonics Institute.
Bold claim.
I know.
Sounds like somebody who's hiding Walt Disney's body would say.
Yeah. So that is my a little bit lighthearted conspiracy theory for you today.
I love that. That's great.
I was just like, what is happening here?
I like it. I think it's a good one. Okay. Are you ready?
I am born ready.
Today, Taylor. Uh-huh. I present to you a 450-year-old mystery, but you are going to have to sit through another installment of history, I have to tell you for context,
okay,
that I try to make interesting.
Great.
Okay. Sir Walter Raleigh. Sir Walter Raleigh, that rapscallion, was an English statesman, soldier, spy, writer, poet, explorer, and landed gentleman.
What a resume.
He was a pretty important guy during the Elizabethan era, and he played a leading part in English colonization. Boo, we hate it, but it's an important part of the story.
Sure.
So he English, sorry, I'm dumb. English, this is what happens when I don't
when you don't take your Adderall.
I'm squirreled away so hard already. I'm four sentences in.
I'm going to have to request that your siesta days are not recording days.
Okay. I just needed a day off.
I'm so sorry that this is happening to you.
Sundays are the only days I have. I have to eat. I have to have one day. Edit all of this out. Do you want me to start over?
Oh, I do what your heart wants. I didn't see you get squirreled until you lost your place.
Okay. Sir Walter Raleigh was an English statesman, soldier, spy, writer, poet, explorer, and landed gentleman. He was a pretty important guy during the Elizabethan era, and he played a leading part in English colonization of North America, suppressed rebellion in Ireland, and helped defend England during the Spanish Armada.
Oh, okay.
Such a long and weird list of accomplishments, but his heart dreamed of another.
Oh, did it?
Well, did.
How many flags can he stake the land with?
So many, and all red.
Yeah.
His heart wanted to be immortal in history books, and he wanted to be the founder of the first permanent English settlement in North America.
Oh, okay. Jamestown.
Jamestown. That's in. Hold on, I will reference that.
Oh, okay.
It's an important part. It's all coming together. So another man, Sir Humphrey Gilbert, had claimed St. John's, Newfoundland, in 1583 as the first North American English territory at the royal prerogative of Queen Elizabeth I. But Walter's dream of a stable community, a fixture in North America, the first city, was the quest that he sought.
Uh-huh.
So this colony was founded by Governor Ralph Lane in 1585 on Roanoke Island in what is now Dare County, North Carolina, United States.
Oh, shit!
Getting there was a journey. And Riley quickly arranged an expedition to explore his claim. It departed England on April 27th, 1584. Two ships sailed and sailed and sailed until July 4th when they sighted land at what is now called Cape Fear. The fleet made landfall on July 13th at an inlet north of Hatteras Island. The Native Americans in the region had likely encountered or at least observed Europeans from previous expeditions. The Secatan, who controlled the island and the mainland between Albemarle Sound and Pamlico River, soon made contact with the English, and they established pleasant relations. They're not like besties.
Sure.
But they
cordial.
They were cordial. Yes, all very chill with each other. Upon their return to England in the autumn of 1584, Amatus and Barlow spoke highly of the tribe's hospitality and the strategic location of Roanoke. And the expedition reports described the region as pleasant and, like, bountiful, and alluded to, like, the Golden Age and the Garden of Eden and, like, this beautiful place, and went on and on and on about it. So the queen was pleased as punch with the results of Riley's expedition, and she, in 1585, during a ceremony to knight him, proclaimed the land granted to him Virginia, and proclaimed him knight and lord and governor of Virginia.
Wow.
I know, big...
big moves.
Big moves.
Riley.
Yeah. Who, and like, who are you to name? Like, that land has a name. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
We renamed it.
It's Virginia now.
Yeah.
So stupid. So Sir Walter Riley started whatever, like, the prehistoric version of a GoFundMe was.
A Kickstarter.
A Kickstarter. And set out. For the first colony in Virginia, Riley planned a mostly militant operation. I promise I will take my Adderall next time. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. We have three more episodes.
Oh, I know.
Okay. Okay.
It's a colonial Kickstarter program. That's what I'm cackling about.
Colonial Kickstarter. Oh, man. Okay, so he planned a mostly militant operation focused on the exploration and evaluation of natural resources. The intended number of colonists was 69, but approximately 600 men.
What?
Yes, were sent on the voyage.
That is 100 times too many.
That's so many men.
Ew.
It's a lot.
So many white men.
Ew. Colonizing. It's so icky.
They all have syphilis.
Funny you mention that.
Yeah.
Funny you mention that. So 600 men were sent, and about half of that intended to remain with the colony. So, like, they were going to leave 300 men there.
Okay.
And the other 300 were there to, like, help set up and, like, get everything going and, like, build the stuff. And then they were going back to England.
Okay.
So it was a rough and tumble-ass voyage. It went so bad. The fleet of seven ships were separated by a storm. They rendezvoused at a meeting point south, like near Mexico.
Okay.
One ship just never showed up. The ships who did got into a tussle with the Spanish a couple of times. Because the English and the Spanish are all out exploring, like, the Caribbean and all of that area, like, together, trying to claim land. One of the ships, the Tiger, lost nearly all of its provisions, which were all the food. And another ship was lost. And all in all, only four of the seven ships made it to the actual colony.
Not fantastic odds.
Not fantastic. And without the necessary supplies from the Tiger, it was determined that only 100 men were allowed to stay with the colony. Like, that's how much they lost.
Wow.
They cut down the population by 2/3. It was the minimum amount for the colony to function.
Okay.
Until they could have, like, their return trip.
More provisions given to them.
Correct.
Got it.
And still have, like, barely enough to sustain them till the next load of people arrived, which had left England in June of 1585. So they were about, like, 2 months behind them. And they're like, you have enough to last you 2 months until the new ships come. But what head honcho Greenville did not know was that that ship had been redirected to Newfoundland and was no longer going to the colony.
Oh, man.
Yikes.
Poor communication.
Poor communication. To warn, they were headed to Newfoundland to warn English fleets that the Spanish were out pirating around and seizing English fishing and commercial boats. And until a resupply mission could be arranged, the colony was really just going to have to tough it out. Which actually means relying solely on the Native Americans for survival. Now, Greenville and the gang weren't exactly gracious guests here, and after exploring one day, Greenville noticed a silver cup was missing. Assuming it was stolen, he sent a crew back to the last Native village that they were at, and when none of the villagers produced the cup, swift retribution was required, so the entire village was burned to the ground.
Oh,
indeed.
That's not good news.
The most of the autumn was spent begging local tribes for corn to supplement their dwindling supplies, and very few records exist about what happened between in September and March of that year. We know that they got enough fish, clams, corn, and grain to help them last through the season. All was not well, but it was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Until they started to notice a strange phenomenon. All of the villages and towns that the colonists recently visited all experienced a deadly plague. We now know that this was probably either the Spanish flu or smallpox.
Yeah.
But the colonists thought that, like, the Native Americans were dying off because of their, like, demonic worshipping, whatever.
Sure.
And all of the Native Americans thought that the colonists were, like, poisoning them with, you know, whatever.
No trust.
No trust at all. So come spring, after a lot of the people have died off and they didn't have any food and they're relying all of the Native Americans and their, like, good hospitality for their survival, tensions were high and morals were low.
Yeah.
And then they tried to attack some of the Native tribes and they lost. And then the Native tribes attacked them and then the tribes won. And then they were hit by a hurricane, and then they evacuated the colony.
It was just one thing after another for them.
They had a really bad time.
Bad time.
They had a bad time. So his first expedition was not great. So
not good.
Despite the colossal failure, Riley was not to be dissuaded. And so he launched another expedition. And this new expedition and settlement would ultimately come to be known as the Lost Colony of Roanoke.
Yeah. Holy crap.
Longest intro ever, right?
I am here for it. I like it.
So, John White, who I assume was as bland and boiled mayonnaise sounding as his name, convinced Riley to try and settle a colony again. So we did. This time, 115 people agreed to go, including John White's pregnant daughter, Eleanor, and her hubbin, Anias. Due to the hostilities left behind by the failed Lane colony, it was decided that this time they would attempt to settle in what is known as Chesapeake Bay. This batch of adventurers included women and children, but no military force.
Why?
Well, they're like, well, it went so good last time, so let's, like, try to have, like, actual families there.
Okay.
All right.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Uh-huh. So on May 8th, three ships set sail, and on June 22nd, the flagship dropped anchor at Croatoan Island. The initial plan was for a team of 40 men to disembark and seek out 15 men stationed there by Grenville. Once he boarded the flagship, however, a man who claimed to be representing the Captain Fernandez ordered him to leave the passengers at Roanoke. So the following morning, the team set out to find the old fort. They were successful. They found it, dismantled. The house is vacant and overgrown with melons, and there was no sign of the Greenville party left behind.
Uh-oh.
Aside from some skeletal remains that White found and assumed belonged to the men, presumably murdered by the indigenous people. The remainder of the ships arrived in mid-July and disembarked in Roanoke, right on the footsteps of the colony before them. So much for Chesapeake.
Oh.
Shortly thereafter, one of the colonists was out hunting crabs alone and was murdered by the locals. White arranged for a public relations team to go smooth things over with the Croatoan tribe and tell them, like, hey, you know those other white people who were just here that, like, brought plague to your family and killed your sons and, like, ate through all of your rations? Yeah, they, like, super sucked. So sorry. We're not like those regular white colonizers. Like, we're cool colonizers.
We're cool colonizers.
We're just here to chill. So, like, stop killing us. please.
Please.
Please. Thanks. But there was no response to their, like, friend party that they sent out. So they just came back. So, as a preemptive strike against the locals, they decided to attack the Desamongupanke tribe. However, the tribe, fearing this exact situation, had already abandoned their village. So, unbeknownst to White, the men that they found and killed were actually Crow Odoan tribe's men who were looting the village.
Whoop.
Big oops, my guy. That's a big PR nightmare.
Yeah.
So he sent out another group to try to smooth things over again.
He's like, we're really sorry we keep making these errors in judgment. And they didn't even have their education system to blame at that point.
No.
Like we do.
Sorry. We're just shitty. God. So already these new colonists were in a tricky position.
Mm-hmm.
They're waiting out for the Spanish, who had reportedly been seen snooping around. They're watching out for local tribes. They are starving. They are trying to build shelters for the winter. All around having like a no good, rotten, terrible time. So White's daughter, Eleanor, gives birth to a baby aptly named Virginia.
Of course.
Oh, great. Who was hailed as the first Christian born in America. Good job. The colony is in a real pickle. And they eventually convince White to leave and sail back to England to please beg for help from the Queen, or else they're all going to die.
We have not stopped begging for help from the Queen since then.
No. We're still
begging for help from the Queen.
From the Queen. So eventually he agrees. And he sails for England on August 27th, 1587.
So we're like 30 years from the original colony.
Oh, no. We're like 3 years.
Oh,
from the original colony.
That was in 1550 something.
Mm-mm.
Sorry, my bad.
Nope. Nene. 1584.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So, no, we are not too far out.
They're probably like, could you quit fucking it up?
Leave us alone.
We don't want you here. Obviously, there is some being out there that also doesn't want you here.
Leave.
Please. Go back to your cushy England.
Love you so much. Go away.
Have some tea and biscuits.
They can't. They're starving. They have nothing. They have tea.
You could have that if you went home.
Go back to England and have tea and biscuits.
You could have tea and biscuits if you just go home.
And leave our crabs alone. Please.
You don't even like corn.
Your bodies can't even digest it.
Right.
Oh, God. So, 1587. August of 1587. He agrees. He sails back home. It's a troublesome journey. And the bad news does not stop there.
What? All of these journeys are bad.
Every single one. How are you supposed to travel across the ocean in a rickety wood boat with no walkie-talkies, smoke signals, text, GPS? Like, how do you know? You don't know where the fuck you're going. You just hope. You just hope you land somewhere.
That you recognize.
Yeah.
What a time.
What a time. So, when he gets back to England, he gets a little bit of bad news. He finds out the Spanish are acting real squirrely and their armada is on the move for London. So the Queen has commanded all ships stay put to help her defend the crown. So he's frozen there. England and Spain battled it out in whatever war was being fought, and a ship with supplies for Roanoke was looted by French pirates, of all things.
Mm.
Like, that would have been like, can you imagine? I can't imagine a French in my brain, a French pirate. I just feel like it would be, like, very, no, like, give us what you have.
It feels like cosplay.
It feels, yes, like smoking a cigarette, lounging on the side of the boat. Like, yeah, put that in the box.
Yeah, I'll take that, too.
I'll take that as well. Thank you.
Cosplaying as pirates.
Oh, I love it. The two battled it out, whatever war. The Queen was finally like, okay, you can send a ship to Roanoke. The ship went to Roanoke. It was looted by French pirates. And then the Queen banned ships from leaving again to organize a counter armada to go attack Spain. So eventually, the Queen authorized a supply of ships to return to Roanoke.
Okay.
A fleet of ships was sent to the Caribbean to go fuck around and find out what the Spanish strongholds were doing there.
Uh-huh.
And two of these ships would then branch off and return to the colony. And so it was. The Hopewell, in the moonlight, anchored off the coast of Croatoan Island on August 12th,
1590. Uh-oh.
3 years.
They just left him there?
3 years. Yes. His daughter and his grandchild.
Earth.
Not a ship has come or gone.
Yeah, they for sure thought he died on the way back.
Oh, absolutely.
They for sure was like, no one is ever coming for us.
No.
3 years? That is
no such contact.
A long time. Such a long time.
Oh, man. Okay, so three years later. After they anchor, 3 days after they drop anchor, they see plumes of smoke rising up from the island. The following morning, they investigated another column of smoke on the southern end of Croatoan Island, but found nothing. The landing party spent the next 2 days attempting to cross Pamlico Sound with considerable difficulty and loss of life. And on August 17th, they sighted a fire on the north end of Roanoke and rowed towards it. But when they reached the island after nightfall and they were like, we can't really go to shore right now. It's going to be a fucking death trap. So the men spent their night in their anchored boats singing English songs in hopes that the colonists would hear them.
Aww.
Cute, right? Then on the morning of August 18th, on what it would have been Virginia's third birthday, White and his party made landfall. There were fresh tracks in the sand, but there were no people. They found the letters C-R-O carved into a tree nearby where they landed.
Uh-huh.
And when they located the encampment, they found that it had been reinforced with a palisade, and the word Croatoan was carved into one of the main fence posts that, like, you have to cross into to get into the, like, camp.
Uh-huh.
The homes had been entirely dismantled, and still there were no people, no traces of people. Three crates that White had left behind before he left, he, like, dug holes and buried crates that had all of his notes, all of his research, because he was out there looking for, like, resources and gold and
sure.
tracking and all of that. All three of those had been looted and dug up. So, like, all of his research and notes from when he was there before was gone. anything that could be carried was gone. The entire place had been looted. And White presumed that the colonists had, like, peacefully and happily relocated to Croatoan Island with the tribe that lived there. And he stated that if the need would rise for them to move, they would carve the destination into a tree or as a secret code to use, like, if they were under duress before he left. They're like, if you have to, like, whatever, just tell me, leave me a sign where you're gonna go, so I'll come find you.
Leave me a sign.
Uh-huh.
3 years later.
What does this sign mean? The team returned to the ship that evening, but never made landfall on the island again.
Wow.
Another, an anchor cable had snapped in the head boat, and they couldn't risk the wreck to return. So they agreed to sail to the Caribbean and return in the spring.
Okay.
But conditions in the spring would not allow it.
Oh, no.
And as White had described in his reports, he assumed that they were just cohabitating with the Croatoan and having, like, a blast. And so there was, like, no pressure to get back.
He was living in such hard denial.
Seriously.
He was just like, they're fine.
I'm sure it's great.
They're totally fine.
Totally capable women and children.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So some could say Sir Walter Raleigh was having a really tough time making his dreams come true. Like, it's okay. It happens. We move on. And, in 1595, when Raleigh set out on his very first transatlantic voyage, he claimed to be in search of his lost colonists. Although he would admit this was disinformation to cover up his search for El Dorado. On the return voyage, he sailed past the Outer Banks and later claimed that weather prevented him from landing, but really he just moved on, and interest in what happened to the colonists dwindled.
Wow.
So
just
what,
like, we just don't worry about these 100 just, people anymore.
We just don't care about it. Well, it has been 10 years.
Yeah.
So they're either fine or they're long dead.
That's true. There's two options.
So what actually happened to them that is the mystery. So John Smith, yes, like the Jamestown, was captured by the Powhatan chieftain, which this is like, this whole section, it's very, like, it's giving very Grandmother Willow.
Okay.
And, like, strange clouds? That whole... Okay. Anyway, do you remember Thomas from Pocahontas? Like, yeah. Why was he so worthless? Didn't he, like, fell off the boat and then he couldn't fucking fire a gun? Like, who brought him?
I feel like this was the one nod to this supposed to be that these are all children. I feel like he was supposed to be, like, 14.
Okay, well, Pocahontas was 14, and we drew her, like, she was, like, a slim,
21-year-old woman of her own wiles.
She was not.
She was not.
Child.
Yeah, no. Easier to make boys 14.
Yeah. Did you know that Thomas in Pocahontas was voiced by Christian Bale?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
I learned that recently.
I love that fact.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Is that Batman?
Yeah.
Batman.
Did you watch The O.C.? Okay. The guy that played Hercules was like the dad in The O.C. And now I can't unsee it.
It's going to haunt you.
It will.
Forever.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I got squirreled. This is what happened. I got squirreled. So John got captured by Powhatan, who was the chief, and they had like a nice little discussion. And they were talking about a tribe who was not too far away, who wore all English, like, style clothes.
Weird.
And had walls made out of stone. And he tried to make a plan to search them out. However, he was a prisoner, so that did not happen. And in 1610, William Strachey rolled up in Jamestown and hung out there for a while. And when he returned, he wrote a book in which he surmised that the lost colonists had spent 20 years living peacefully with a tribe beyond the Powhatan territory until Wahunasinakwa, a chieftain, attacked and killed that entire tribe. So he presumed that, like, they did survive and they befriended a tribe, but one of the other tribes came and killed everybody. So
they still got killed in the end.
And then in 1701 to 1709, John Lawson had an exploration crew to Carolinas. He visited Hatteras Island, and he noted, like, no evidence of European activity on the Outer Banks throughout the 17th century. He was the first historian to investigate the region since White left in 1590. So he's the only one who put forth any effort.
Yikes.
And this is, like, a solid 110 years later.
So everybody's dead.
Correct. He did find some ruins, though, there that, like, could be reminiscent of, like, European colonists. And then he heard rumors about some of the people in the Hatteras tribe and how some of them had gray eyes.
I've heard about that.
Yeah. So he went and searched them out and said that, yeah, that they did have gray eyes, that maybe it assumed that, like, they, like, interbred.
Yeah.
In that there were some, like, old European, like, coins and, like, artifacts that he found, but none of those have ever survived for us to study. The ruins that he encountered in 1701 eventually became a tourist attraction. And James Monroe visited the site, the president, in 1819 and described, like, the fort as little more than earthwork in the shape of, like, a small bastion almost. Mm. And they filmed a silent film in 1921 called The Lost Colony.
Oh.
I know. So that was when, like, the mystery was, like, reinstated. And so they made that site a National Historic Site so nobody could go there, except for scientists. And so now scientists are reinvested.
Wow.
In figuring out what the fuck happened. There's been archaeological research, excavation, DNA research, and still... no one truly knows. We've been able to figure out through climate research that there was an extreme drought from 1587 to 1590 that would have made the inexperienced settlers struggle to survive, indicating an integration with a local tribe or death.
Mm-hmm.
There's no situation where, like, they just survived.
They could do it on their own.
They didn't. They either died or they had to rely on Native Americans. We do. Okay. So now in today times, we have technology to trace genetic information back to see if the colonists truly blended into the native people in the region, which is super cool.
That's crazy.
The issue is, to trace mitochondrial DNA with certainty, we need original DNA from the settlers. And to date, they have not found any bones that have, like, confirmed that group of 100 people.
Okay.
So it has been called the Area 51 of colonies.
Wow.
It is a mystery that remains unsolved, but now, 450 years later, it seems that people finally care. These brave adventurers were, like, seeking out a new world, and they just literally, like, has your mom ever forgot to, like, pick you up from a movie theater or something?
Oh, yeah.
It's very that.
Yeah.
Like, can you, I'm scared. Can you come pick me up?
Right.
You have no cell phone. The matter has developed a reputation among the academics for attracting obsession and sensationalism. This little scholastic benefit. But, you know, mysteries are an itch that we just desperately want to scratch. And this one might be unscratchable. And we just might not ever know.
What happened to them?
What happened to them? Like, what it... Like, what Croatoan is that, like, who attacked you?
Yeah.
You took the time to carve Croatoan in, like, two different areas, and you couldn't put any... This is...
Friend or foe.
This is an example of, like, what good note-taking will do.
Mm-hmm.
Just a crumb of context.
Yeah. Like, this is... I get myself into this rabbit hole all the time in my own notes, because when I'm taking notes during a meeting, normally it's, like, a scratch piece of paper.
Uh-huh.
And it's... written diagonally across three different lines, yep. And it'll just be one random word that I thought was very important during this meeting, and I'll, like, write the word out, and then I'll, like, underline it, and then, like, somebody will come back to it later, so I'll add a question mark behind it, and then I'll look back at my notes to be like, okay, what did we talk about during this meeting? It'll just be like, training material, question mark.
Underlined four times.
And I'm like,
with the heart in the corner.
Huh. Wonder what I'm supposed to do with that. And that was me 4 hours ago.
Let alone 450 years.
Yeah.
But that's essentially what the colonists did. They were taking notes in a meeting and took bad notes.
They took bad notes.
And now we'll just
studying.
Now we'll just never know. Like, there's some trains that said, like, the Spanish came and murdered them all because they were European.
Yeah. I thought we just had news that came out that said that they were, like, they were closer to figuring it out, and they were more leaning toward...
I didn't see anything.
Huh.
So I saw a lot of, like, actual academic
whatever,
but a lot of it was talking about how, like, I don't want to say, like, it doesn't matter.
Sure.
But it really is kind of like a laughing stock in North American archaeology, because they're just like...
Weird.
Yeah.
Did you give your sources?
Oh, no. Hold on. Wikipedia.com, history.com, and... I just put Google, but I'm assuming that there's a Google book that I read that we will tag in the notes. Hold on. Tell me your bright and shiny, and I bet I'll find it.
Okay. My bright and shiny is my family. They've been super sweet and supportive over the last couple of weeks, and I'm just very grateful to have so many people that I can rely on in my family. And hopefully by the time that this comes out, I have another nephew.
Oh my gosh, a little baby.
Little baby Ford will have made his appearance by now, and I'm very excited.
I love that.
I bet he's a big smoosh.
Myth, Obsession, and the Search for the Lost Colony of Roanoke by Andrew Lawler.
Perfect. Thank you.
You are welcome.
What's your bright and shiny?
My bright and shiny is... that next weekend, Ian and I are going to Arizona.
Yeah.
For, like, the quickest trip to meet, because he has extended family out there that I have not had the chance to meet yet.
Cool.
And the clock is ticking on us getting married.
Yeah.
So we're going out there to meet some of his, well, he knows them.
Sure.
But I'm going out there to meet some family, and I'm just really looking forward to it. We're going to see the Grand Canyon.
Oh, fun.
And we're going to visit Sedona, spend a day in Sedona.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just really excited. I just genuinely love to travel. If I could do nothing but travel around and, like, see new places, I would just be the happiest.
Girl, same.
Happiest. little nugget. Yeah. So anytime I get to do it, it's like a big bright and shiny. So that's mine.
Cool.
So thank you to everybody who came out and saw us at DeadCon.
Yeah. We had a blast.
We had such an absolute blast. Such a good time. I'm sure you guys have like seen all of the shenanigans on the Insta. So all thanks. The things. Thank you. Keep an eye out. So not next Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Will be the mashup episode. We're starting the mashup again. So yeah.
Yeah, not the 24th, the 31st.
Yeah, next Sunday.
Yeah.
Right?
Next Sunday.
It's hard for me to be in two different timelines, Taylor.
Next Sunday.
Just keep, listen, if you need a link to, like, the Google Doc calendar.
No. There's too much on there.
Literally, so Taylor and I have synced our calendars. I'm sure we've talked about this before, but it is just straight chaos.
Absolutely. There's so much on there.
Every time I open like a day and I'm like, oh shit, what am I supposed to do today? But it's like, Taylor has a dentist appointment.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Something. And I put all my like travel webinars in there. We both go to therapy. So like I'll see like therapy come up and I'm like, wait, is that me?
Who's that's therapy?
Who's going to therapy today? It's not me.
Is it my
it's
therapy?
Not me.
Listen, yeah. Taylor has a really intimate look at like my period cycle now.
Oh yeah. It's great.
I advise everybody to sync calendars with your bestie.
It's great.
It's amazing.
It's really nice.
Right.
You need to add your vacation on here.
I just added it this morning.
Oh, did you?
Okay, yes.
Great. All right. So share your bright and shinies with us. We want to hear them. If you have an ookie spooky story, please send them in to alittlebitgrim@gmail.com.
Follow us on Insta, Twitter,
yeah.
Social meds.
Check out the website.
Say hi in the Facebook group. Leave us a review if you like what you hear.
Yeah. And we can't wait to hear from you. So be kind to yourself.
And others.
Goodbye. Bye.